All right. This week on the show, we have Ryan Lampers. We've been doing a live YouTube series every Wednesday night, and Ryan was our guest last week. If you don't know Ryan Lampers, he's half of Hunt Harvest Health. He's a super successful public land hunter. He's also one hell of a gardener, and he makes hell of food prep before he goes into the backcountry. He does his own dehydrating. He grows his own stuff, and just a wealth of knowledge on everything backpack hunting. So sit back and listen to Ryan. I'm sure you'll learn something, because I always do. All right, I think we're live, and so everybody knows this is a microphone right here, just not some random piece that's showing up that we don't know what it is. And
it's not a chandelier.
Yeah, it's not a chandelier. We have Ryan Lampers on the show today, and before we get to him, I'd like to point out that it's brought to you by MountainOps.com. We're also brought by Bertram Brass and Rockslide.com, so please support them because they support us. Ryan, how's it going over there in Bozeman? You guys snowed out?
Oh boy. Yeah, we doing great over here, Ryan. It's a big change from where we came from, obviously, but we've got a significant amount of snow. Yesterday we finally had a kind of a break in the weather. It's been in the minus temps for weeks. Some of the coldest temps for February and March that they've seen for a while, but finally broke yesterday, got above freezing, and started to thaw a little bit. Of course, it dropped back down last night, but not a lot of snow. I'm a little bit further west of Bozeman, so we don't get as much as Bozeman does, but we got a significant amount.
You guys having trouble plowing out your driveway or anything?
You know what? So part of the deal when I bought this house here is I wanted the guy to throw in his snowblower, and he did. And so I've never had a snowblower, never needed one in Washington, but been using that. Thing's great. And then we got some really cool neighbors that'll help with the big stuff, because I don't have a plow on my truck yet, but I will get that eventually. So now good people out here. They're always willing to help, and really like the move where we're at.
So how did this get started? I know that the Hillary's from Bozeman, but what made you finally want to move from your little sanctuary over there in Western Washington?
Holy smokes. Lots of things, Ryan. Lots of things. We've been wanting to move over to Montana for a while, figuring out the perfect town. Bozeman made sense. Hillary's from here. She grew up here, went to school here, still got family here. I get over here hunting every fall, and I hate to leave this place. I don't necessarily hunt around Bozeman, but I just love Montana in general. And so we, Hill and I have been talking for years about trying to get over here. How are we going to do it? How are we going to afford it? With all the businesses back home and responsibilities, we knew it was going to be a tough move. But, as far as this place that we're in, I know a lot of people make fun of people for moving to Bozeman, but man, I tell you what, it's just got so much. I mean, it's got, if you're an outdoorsy guy, it's got everything. It's got, world-class fly fishing, if that's your thing. Bird hunting is incredible here. You don't have to drive very far. It's got the big game every which direction. Mountains all around you if you love skiing, hiking, anything and everything. And, I've got two daughters. I've got Little Miss Paley Bell and little Tana, and quite honestly, everything going on back in Washington these days, wasn't real comfortable raising them there where we were anymore. My oldest daughter, we had homeschooled her in her entire life, and she went to like a co-op with other kids, but she mentioned to us that she wanted to go to the public school. She wanted to ride the yellow bus, so that was a part of the decision making. We did not have the best schools where I came from in the town that I lived in. Bozeman has great schools. Real like-minded people over here. Not so much back in Western Washington where we came from. Politics and everything else. It's just not the place that I grew up in, that I wanted to raise my daughters in. So we were willing to do whatever it took to get over here. And so we made that move.
I think it's a cool town. We went over there last year.
Yeah.
And I think that was the first time we've actually been into the town and not just driven by it. And I was like, this is a super cool little town. I was loving it. I thought it was a great place.
You should much rather, you should probably move there over Coeur d'Alene, people.
Yeah. Absolutely. Way better than Coeur d'Alene.
Well, yeah, Bozeman's got a little bit of everything. You know, I like the country feel, which, so Hill and I were butting heads, like she wanted to be right in Bozeman. Mm-hmm. But let's face it, Bozeman is expensive. It's trendy. It's got a college to it. So we were looking 30 minutes outside of Bozeman. And so we settled on a town 30 minutes outside of Bozeman that was, you know, a highway commute, real quiet, and you can get to town and get all the everything you want in like a small town type feel to it. People still know everybody. Dude, you pull up, you get fueling up your truck and you hear people talking about hunting, which just blew me away. It's like everybody's the same here. You're not like a standout, unique type person. Like you just didn't see that back in Western Washington. So real good people to talk to. And yeah, the town is amazing. It's got, you know, still got that small town feel, but just really good people. And like I said, every which direction, you don't have to go far and you're in the mountains. So
does this mean you're going to stay out of Idaho and not come and just stay over there and kill animals? Don't come over here.
Sorry, buddy. No, Idaho is still on the radar. Washington is off the radar. Idaho is.
I don't care about Washington.
Very close. But no, we've already planned. We got spring bear coming up. We're going to be dipping into your country. So, yeah.
Oh, take all the predators. Just leave the elk in here.
Yeah. Go crazy on the wolves. Crazy.
Yes. Oh, man. I'd love to get after them over there. I haven't got into that hunt yet. But, no, now that we're closer over here, it's definitely going to be on the list for sure.
Yeah, and it's weird. I didn't realize. I was talking to Jeff Brozovich last week, and they already closed down the Montana season. It's on a quota or something, I guess. That's kind of weird.
For the wolves?
Yeah. Wolves are already closed.
Like they do with cougars and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, ours only runs till the 31st of March, I believe, but Montana's is already closed, and it really doesn't seem to be that long, which I find disturbing.
Right. Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah, I haven't looked into it a whole lot. I think it just closed. Today or yesterday or I don't know, very recent.
Is it, I mean, I don't know if you know or not, is it open or is it like a quota like the cats are?
Like you have to
I think it's a quota if I'm not mistaken. I believe it's on a quota.
So is it like male and female too? Like you have
years ago when we were up in the northwest corner, I remember when we were looking at it, we got our wolf tags. We always have them when we're here. But no, they were talking about that quota, so it could have been shut down.
Gotcha. Well, shifting gears a little bit, I cyber stalk you a little bit, so the hub don't creep you out. But
he does it with everybody.
What's Dan Stanton? You guys did Elk Shape. What was that all about?
Man, that was a fun project. I'm really glad Dan put that together. So Elk Shape Camp was basically like a 3-day event, 2.5-day event. We found a group of 20 guys. Dan did that. He just wanted to learn. They wanted to get better. They wanted to take a little bit of the curve away, you name it. Wanted to sign up to just kind of better themselves. And so Dan put this whole thing together. We had a kind of a meet and greet on a Friday night, had some dinner, met everybody, got a chat. Saturday was just a grind fest. We had Dirk, the bugler, Durham. He was there talking elk calling. So he was teaching these guys how to elk call. Dan was being motivating like he always is, trying to explain to people nutrition, fitness, workouts that may help you in the long run, life in general. Dan's got a unique approach to it in that it kind of correlates, you know, discipline with elk hunting to discipline in life. And he kind of keeps that correlation going. He talks about it a lot. He's a very disciplined guy. Obviously, if you watch him, you follow him. It's pretty impressive what he's able to do. And I think it was a really good success. The Elk Shape Camp. We had a guy, Spokane Valley Archery. We all went over to his place. He put on a seminar talking about anything from arrow setups, his opinions on broadheads, arrow, you know, bow tuning, you name it. And then we had a little kind of one-on-one tape sessions with each individual guy where Josh could kind of go over you know, anything. The bow didn't look right. It was out of tune. Maybe dump a half inch off your draw. Maybe this, that. I just kind of gave them a lot of pointers, how they were shooting, how they were releasing, where your arm should be. So I think it opened up a lot of guys to how they should be shooting or how they could do it a little better. And overall, yeah, a lot of talking, a lot of working out with Dan. He put those guys through the ringer. I mean, he did his style fitness, CrossFit workouts, and no, everybody crushed it. Everybody gave 100%. It was really cool to see. I think everybody walked away from that feeling like they learned a lot and really, you know, pretty inspired to get after it and you know, get ready for elk season, which Dan is all about elk. That's his thing, is just elk. And no, he lives it. So
I was real happy. Like the Mountain Tough program where you can log on and you see like a workout for each day, or is it just like a gym where you go in and like a CrossFit gym that he's modified?
Yes. Dan owns, gosh, I wish that I knew the name of his gym there. It's CrossFit. It's like Spokane
Valley CrossFit. Something, isn't it?
Spokane Valley CrossFit, something like that.
I think so.
So yeah, so he runs that. He's ran it for a lot of years. He's got a real good following there. A lot of people coming in. And so he gets everybody dialed in on workouts and helps them, pushes them, inspires and motivates them and all that. So I know he runs that gym there, and you know, he's very well educated in everything nutrition and fitness and health and that. So
what's your thoughts on CrossFit? You gonna join up?
No, I'm not a CrossFit guy, Ryan. I enjoyed watching everybody do the CrossFit. Oh, that was fun. But no, I mean, you know, my fitness, my training, is just a little bit different. I'm kind of introverted. I'm not big on gyms. I do like to just do my workouts here at the house. I like to hike every day. I like to throw weight on, those type things. Things are going to help me in the mountains. And, there is a Mountain Tough, which is another great company right here out of Bozeman. I am going to go, see what that's all about. I have not yet. I haven't met Dustin, but that's in the, yeah, sounds like it. I've heard nothing but good things about those guys and their fitness. Their workouts are insane. So I'm going to do that. And I may spend a few days in their gym, but quite honestly, it'll be probably more about figuring out what I can do back at the house and do it from my home.
What is the Ryan Lamper School of Fitness look like at the Lamper's household?
Well, it's a work in progress, quite honestly. So, you know, this house that we got, it's a three level. It's got a downstairs to it, which is perfect because I've always wanted my own little room, my own little man room, my man space down there where I've gotten, you know, just me and my stuff and antlers and all my hunting gear. But right now I've just kind of crudely thrown together this little workout room, building the plyo box, just building whatever I can. And then, you know, I've got some weight equipment down there. I got some battle ropes. I've just got, you know, some bands and things and weights that I use. And no, I enjoy it. I get down there, the girls, you know, they'll do the jump ropes, they'll do the battle ropes, and we'll get after the burpees and all that kind of thing. And a lot of lunges, a lot of box stuff, but no, it's real simple. It's just, you know, I push as hard as I think I need to. And quite honestly, I think I push harder on the mountain, like every single day here. I'm hiking. They've got a trail right out of Bozeman. I drop my girls off in the morning. It's right there. It's perfect. It's called the M Trail. It's right out of Bozeman. Short little trail. You can grind this thing up to the top, crampons or micro spikes and trekking poles. Get up there. Get about a half hour of sweat going on. It's just perfect way to start the day. And I just plan on doing that every single day, you know, all through winter, summer, and up to hunting season. So yeah, it's not as sexy as some workouts, but that's just what I feel does the best for me. So
like, how far is it and how many pounds you have in your pack?
Oh, so the M Trail is easy. It's only just over a half a mile. If you go to the first, you can go to the ridge, which is a mile. So however much time you have that morning, go with that. And, you know, right now we're running it without weight. We're going for time. So Cody Ritz joins me quite a few days. He joined me. And yesterday, it's fun to have a guy to push with. So, you know, we run it, we go for time. You know, he's going to get better and faster, and he's really like, he's going all in on this season and starting his working out prior to when he usually does, which is usually in the spring. So, I think it's going to be a good thing for both of us just to keep us pushing and trying to, I don't ever want to allow Cody to beat me to the top. So keep grinding, I know that. But I think it'll be good for both of us. Well, so it's like you've got different sections of that. You can treat that as a big hike as well. You can go all the way up. I was talking to the guys at Stone Glacier, and they said you can run up to Baldy, and it turns into like an 8-mile loop or something like that. So that'll be coming up as well.
Wow. You got to teach them how to grow a real beard, or at least a real Fu Manchu, Cody.
Yeah, no kidding. He needs it.
He might especially just sprout one when you start working out. Just be like, oh, and then it just, I don't know. Then you can get those mountain selfies that everybody craves.
Yeah, it's true. He needs that.
The plyo boxes, do you do a lot of step ups, or you do a lot of explosive stuff on those plyo boxes? I'm interested because somebody just kind of told me all about that the other day. So I'm kind of picking your brain on it.
No, I love the box. It's easy. You know, you can grab a couple dumbbells and just do step ups, or throw weight in your pack and do step ups. There's so many different workouts you can do with that. There's one that we do on occasion. It's it's basically set a timer. You give yourself 1 hour, throw 40 to 50 pounds in your pack and go for numbers. You know, see how many step ups you can get in that time frame. It's brutal. I mean, it's a lot, and you are completely spent at the end of it. But jump, you know, I just like anything you can do with that box. Jump ups, jump off, jump back, burpees at the bottom end. You can really do a lot with that box. But I think step ups, lunges.
How many inches off the ground is it to the top?
I think it's 30.
30 yeah. Inches?
Yeah, it's you know, you can make it, it's three-sided. So you can have a shorter, I think it's like 20 and then 30. But you can kind of have it, you know, drop to where it's a little shorter for the girls, but I think it's 30 inches.
You have to post a picture of that up on your Instagram. I want to see that.
Absolutely. No. Yeah, for sure. We'll do that.
All right. I didn't mean to talk about your fitness regimen, but it was kind of something I was just looking into. You did a podcast a little while ago with Brian Call on CBD oil, the benefits. And I think people are very uneducated on the topic. So can you tell us a little bit about how it's helped you and Hillary, the CBD?
Yeah. So yeah, CBD is one of them hot topics, right? It's like, there's a lot of people that have opinions on CBD. Quite honestly, I'm not the most educated. I'm trying to educate myself more as we go through this. And I learned about it. My wife did a really good podcast with, Matt Clement. He's a local guy here in town. He's an expert in it. He knows a lot about it. He's treated people with it for a lot of years. So, you know, like I said, she could speak to it better, but, you know, we launched that podcast, and quite honestly, Ryan, we were both pretty shocked at how much response we had from that podcast. There was good, there was bad, but the good far, far outweighed bad. And the bad was more people just being uneducated about it. You know, people actually thinking that you could get stoned, or you were actually in a compromised state if you're taking this, like when you're hunting. This was not a podcast that had anything to do with hunting or, you know, smoking weed on the mountain, anything like that. It was talking about CBD, which is completely separate from the other. But overall, the stories that came from that, the people that are getting affected, the people that are using it now for whatever, you know, helping with anxiety, helping with inflammation. There's just a plethora of things that it helps people with. And we've got a podcast coming out with a young gentleman that he's used it, and he's found it to help him, I mean, amazingly well. With all the doctors that he's seen, all the prescriptions, all the pain meds, all these things that he's tried using, they just destroyed him, or they haven't worked. And CBD was one of those pieces that he gave it a shot. He was a skeptic, like, you know, I used to be about it, you know, not knowing a whole lot about it in depth. And he found it to be just life changing. And so we're going to have that podcast coming out here pretty quick. But and he was dealing with a whole host of different issues, from Lyme disease to other things. So no, it's got its place. It's got, for myself, I don't use it myself. I just don't have like sleep issues. I don't have inflammation issues at this point in my life yet. Fortunately, I'm very lucky in that regard. I don't have anxiety. I don't have nausea, but there's a lot of people that do. So I'll talk about it, and you know, if it helps people, great. You know, why not? I mean, it helps a lot of people. I specifically, personally, don't have issues where I think it would help me. But obviously, you know, joint inflammation, things of that nature. Yeah, for sure. I would use it for that, you know, on a big hike if I had something crop up. But my wife, you know, she's had joint pain in her hands from doing body work and things for years, and it helps her, and she's found it to be amazing for that. So there's definitely people that can benefit from it, and I understand that. And you know, I honestly used to be in the boat that I didn't understand CBD. I had no idea what it was, but I'm trying to educate myself and get to that point. But no, it's an interesting medicine that a lot of people don't understand quite yet.
I would agree. It's kind of been vilified from the whole, I don't know, when it started, the war on drugs kind of vilified the whole thing.
Yeah. Sure.
I can't believe people won't consider, you know, a natural alternative to a pharmaceutical one when there's studies that are, you know, especially with such a crisis that we have going on with prescription pain medication. Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, why don't we at least look at this, give it a chance, because it's not like it's a better solution going with pharmaceutical drugs, you know?
Right. I mean, if you step back and look at what's going on with people getting addicted to, you know, you name it, Oxycontin, different pain meds, opioids, whatever, man, it's breaking people's lives apart.
Oh, and absolutely. It doesn't matter.
There's this thing that doesn't have those side effects. It's non-addictive. It's and it benefits people. So I don't know why that stigma still exists, but it does, definitely does. And then in our world, you know, in the hunting world, I know there's a lot of skepticism about it. It's just, I think it's just misinformation. But I think as people learn about it more, they'll understand it better and right. Realize it's not the big bad wolf that people have thought it was.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It's the educational portion that people just, they don't know anybody that's used it. They don't, you know practitioners that recommend it. So they, all they know is, you know, what secondhand information they hear from other people. So I think it's, I'm hopeful that it's going to get more good press.
Yeah, I'm glad you and Hillary are kind of spearheading that and getting it going, because we talked about it yesterday, and I know you kind of told me the feedback you've gotten, and it just is people that are not educated, because the same guys are getting back to camp to see the CBD doesn't even have the psychological effect, to where they're slamming four or five beers, but they want to slam on CBD oil. It doesn't make any freaking sense.
I know.
Yeah, whiskey, yeah, or whatever.
CBD is, for it to be CBD, it is has to be less than 3% THC. I don't know how much CBD you would have to take to actually feel something, but it would be a lot. So now it's, Hill and I, we're happy to bring it, you know, to people's attention if it helps people. And the more I realize the amount of people it helps, it's incredible. I mean, I could sit here and say it's a bad thing, you know, in my comfortable little world where I don't have inflammation issues. I don't have nausea every day. I'm not a cancer patient. I don't have certain conditions, and that, you know, why not give it a chance if it's helping some? I'm not going to sit here on my high horse because I don't have those issues and say that other people shouldn't be able to take it. So, no, I think I'm glad my wife has really kind of dove into this, and she's opened my eyes to it as well. As we learn about it, it's pretty surprising how beneficial it is to a lot of people.
All right, Project Waypoint. I heard a lot about it during the hunting season, and now it's kind of tapered off. When are these videos coming?
Oh, man. So we're supposed to have one coming out here pretty quick. Supposed to be end of this month. We've got one coming out. I think our Colorado hunt, we're going to be putting it out. We've got, here's the thing with Project Waypoint, Ryan. So initially, the whole project was going to be, you know, we're filming everything. We're going to get all these hunts on film, blah, blah, blah. And it was going to be super cool. Well, I'm a lousy camera guy, first off.
Me too.
Yeah. I realize there's a lot more difficulty in self-filming than it looks. I have incredible respect for Remy and Tim and how they're able to capture these hunts on film and do it very, very well. We made some mistakes this year. Absolutely. I did. Myself, I did. Because I did not have either a camera guy capturing some of the shots that I should have had with me. And then I get so wrapped up in the hunt itself that I just don't even want to think about a camera, a tripod, or any of that. So I just go for the hunt and forget about the content and all that thing, which quite honestly doesn't matter to me as much as the hunt itself and trying to find, you know, success and get all that whole adventure. But we did get a significant amount of footage, so we are going to be putting it out for sure. But it should be starting to come out here pretty quick, end of the month.
Yeah, I'm a lot like you, and in the heat of the moment, and she's been with me, it's fuck it, we're getting this done.
Yeah. Oh man. I mean, practically every time, as soon as you find that one animal, I mean, especially on those hard hunts, if you've been in there a week or week plus, you really want, once you get that one opportunity, and let's face it, these opportunities on mature critters is tough. It's limited. It's really, really hard to come by. And when you get that one chance, do you even want to take a 2% risk that this setting this camera up is going to slow me down? It's going to make a noise. It's going to, you know, he's going to see it, blah, blah, blah. And quite honestly, no, I don't. So we are going to keep doing what we're doing. This year, I'm going to have a camera guy with me as much as possible. And just, I know my strengths, I know my weaknesses, and I'm not a camera guy. So I'm going to stay in my lane and just try to do what I like to do, and that's hunting and not worry about the camera stuff. But,
and the people that don't know, this is kind of based on a bunch of guys just picking out spots on public land and going hunting.
Yep. Yeah, just all public land, spots on maps, going for it. A little bit of e-scouting, and once you get there, give it everything you have. Put in every single day that you've allotted for yourself and try to make it happen in that spot. And, you know, that's what we did. We did that a lot this year, and it was real successful in that regard. It's kind of a fun project to do that and then find success in that area that you've picked out and other states and places that you've never been to, right? Just completely new places that you've e-scouted and Google or Onyx.
You guys had never been like physically there before.
Yeah. Yeah. Most of those places. Wow. Only a couple hunts this year did I go back to old haunts, but Nevada was completely new. Colorado was completely new. Montana. So yeah, most of these places were completely new, and it was just fun. I mean, that's one of the things I love is now at this stage of my life, getting out and seeing new places and really trying to like learn them, figure them out. And as much as I do like going back to old haunts that have had success in the past, it's so much fun just to figure out a new place and, you know, spend the days that whatever it takes to, try to find that mature critter and get it done.
Yeah. One of the questions I get asked a lot is, you know, how do you find a spot? And people are afraid to either, even people that live in the West are just afraid to drive someplace and go hunting. So it's kind of cool that you guys just picked a spot and rolled and had success.
Yeah. No, it's been pretty successful. And we've been doing this since we've been getting out of state more in the last few years. That's what everybody does, quite honestly. And most people don't have time to go scout other states. We're all working. We're all mostly blue collar guys that, we don't have that kind of time. So you really want to do your research in your tag selection, as well as your map work ahead of time, so that you don't get there and you put yourself in a bad position. But obviously, you know, we do pick out a few different spots. If you can show up, and let's face it, there's guys getting after it these days. So you may pick this sweet looking spot in the backcountry, and there may be a camp there. So that's where it goes, plan B. But No, it's a lot of fun. Now, one of the most enjoyable pieces is hitting new states now and just hitting completely new units that you've never been to and really figuring them out and trying to find some success.
So how many of you guys did this?
So there's a handful of us. There's myself, there's Jeff Lusk, there's my cousin, Joey Pyburn. You're familiar with Joe.
Yeah.
Ryan Bayless. And then, there's a couple other guys that didn't get out. They're firefighters. They didn't get as many hunts in this year as they were hoping, but hoping that'll change next year. So
did you guys all just pick one spot that you'd never been to hunt the whole season, or just one hunt for each?
Each hunt was different. We had a couple of spring bear trips, where Jeff and I went to one location, Joe and Bayless went to a different location and completely new spots and learned them. And we've tried to make our spring bear trips more of an adventure. Not that you have to go to that level to find spring bears, but I think getting to these, deep holes of places in these wilderness areas and trying to figure them out and find some predators and pull them out of there, it just adds to the adventure. Not that it's necessary to go find bears. Bears are usually pretty easy to find, but these wilderness areas can be a lot of fun to go explore. And obviously it also sets you up for a little bit of scout time for future deer and elk hunts.
What was your guys' success rate, roughly for that?
Overall, it was really good. Really good. I think we only had a couple of hunts that, that we didn't pull critters out of. Really, really high. That's a good question. I'd have to think about that. It was pretty good. Overall, we all did really well and came back and filled tags.
Your wife chimed in. It says, CBD, it's a food, it's nutrition.
There you go. She can explain it better than me.
I know,
for sure.
Have her on to explain all that, because I definitely have inflammation problems. So need to expand on that. On getting past the Project Waypoint thing on your Washington buck, and speaking of old haunts, I hear every day how hunting for animals in Washington sucks. And then I see this great big buck, and guess who's behind it? Montana Jesus, Ryan Lampers.
Jesus. Oh, yeah. So, I mean, Washington's got some great animals. Don't let anybody kid you if they say that it doesn't. Thing about it is, yeah, it doesn't have it's got great country, and it's got some gnarly, gnarly country that grows old critters. It doesn't have the amount of like an Idaho or a Montana or these other states, obviously. But what it also doesn't have is numbers of hunters that are willing to get off trail to really put the miles on and the time. There's road hunters in every state everywhere, but what we found in Washington is there's very few, fewer than other states, that actually get up there and put the time and dedication into getting into these backcountry spots. So that buck, that was a fun hunt. So there was three of us. There's me, Joey, and my buddy Ryan Bayless.
You guys have a podcast on it, because I listened to it today and it was good.
Yep. Yeah, we talked about the whole trip from start to finish. That hunt could not have gone any better. We got Bayless a buck heading into this spot. Joe tagged out a few days in, and then it came down to, I can't remember the day it was. It was maybe end of the week. We had one day left. It was our last morning, and we had seen this buck a couple times. And he was in this small spot, not the best place to really key in. But once I laid eyes on that buck, I knew that was the only one that I really wanted. He was a special buck. He was heavy. He was old. He had a real unique character to his antlers. And the spot that he lived in, his tracks were all over it. His rubs were all over it. Tamaracks on all sides. Just one of the most picturesque, coolest spots you could ever imagine to pull an old gnarly buck out of. It had everything going for it. And somehow, some way, man, that last morning, the stars aligned and I was able to get a beat on that buck. And it was a long morning. Joe came with me that morning. to film it, and we got everything on film, and it was one of the slower mornings of the trip. It just felt dead on the mountain, and it was kind of unique in that that morning, or every morning, you would find bucks and they would, you know, they'd bed up somewhere, and as that sun came up, it was kind of you know, you hear the correlation, like they're like vampires. Those old bucks are like vampires. They just, sun hits them and they disappear. And that's exactly what these old bucks were doing. This one especially, as soon as that sun hit him, he would just drop down or, you know, skirt this little saddle and get out of there. And that morning, as we waited there, that sun slowly kept creeping down. We hadn't seen a doe. We hadn't seen anything that morning. But I knew he wasn't too far away. And sure enough, he was just in one little spot that we couldn't lay eyes on, a little fold. And he got up and I heard something and he just rolled a rock. He came right down, stood there at about 115 yards and I dumped him and it all worked out. And Joe and I are just like, I mean, it was, couldn't have worked out any better. Amazing, amazing hunt, amazing animal. Couldn't have ended Washington on a better note to find that old sucker. I mean, he's just got everything you want. Old Roman nose, pot-bellied old-time buck. So,
is this a buck? Did you say earlier? Have you had history with this buck? Have you ever seen that buck before?
No, he was in a little spot that I had seen prior, and I always had a feeling about this little spot. In fact, I talked to Joe. I mentioned, was like, man, if we do ever see a buck in that spot there, it's probably going to be 30 inches. He's probably going to be huge. And he was just that when we finally did. And, you know, it's one of those places you don't see a lot of animals, but the ones that you do see are going to be pretty significant, old age class. But no, definitely didn't have history with that buck. The only history I had with that buck is throughout that week, he would show himself for very limited amount of time and disappear for the day.
It kills me how many people pack up and leave hunting camp early because they're not seeing stuff. Because two out of the three mule deer I've shot have been literally the last hour on the last day. And I'm like, how can you leave early? You don't know until, like, when it's done and you have no other time. That kills me when I hear people say, oh, we're not seeing anything, and they pack up and go home.
I have no idea why, Tanya, that last day thing happens like it does.
Okay? I don't know. Even it's not like so you're not trying, hour, you know.
It's unexplainable, but in my lifetime, I should try to count up the last day bucks or bulls. It's a significant number, and I don't know why that happens that way. Whether it's the last day that I have or it's the actual last day of the season, mm-hmm. It happens so often. There's something to it that I can't explain. I think
either way, it doesn't matter because it's the last day, you know, I mean, yeah. For you, we need to do a contest on that. Like last day bucks.
I have a theory on the last day of the season. It's because animals are going back to their old patterns because there ain't nobody out there anymore.
Yeah. Cause everybody's gone home.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I mean, logically it's probably you've spent enough time to have finally figured out the animals. You're at that point where you've learned their behavior, you've learned their habits. It's got to be something like that. But there is something magical about that last day that I can't explain for sure. So.
I agree.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I liked Ryan. What's Ryan's last name that's with you?
Bayless.
I liked his frankness in when he started that podcast about animals or deer, elk being out in the sun. So he said, I like being in the sun. So the animal should be out in the sun, which in logic, you'd think that's true. I mean, it's absolutely not true, but I liked his frankness. Cause I think a lot of people think that way.
Yeah, that was him in a nutshell growing up. You know, he hunted with a small group of fellas and, in his man brain, he just assumed, hey, I like the sun when it comes out, it warms me up. Deer gotta love the same thing. So he was always looking in the sun patches versus north slopes and all that. So, you know, he obviously found very little success in those early years, but he's learned a lot and he's figuring it out. So,
yeah, that was a good podcast. I don't know which number it was. I know it was in December, but if you guys want to listen to a good one, that was a good one.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you this. How many deer in the last 3 years, how many animals in the last 3 or 4 years have you shot on private land?
I've never shot one on private land.
I saw something a while back and I was like, yeah, he's lucky and this and that. You're not lucky. You are lucky, but you put a lot of time and effort into it and it's all been public land, correct?
I've never been guided and never hunted private land in my life. Nope, I've never gone on a paid hunt. Not once. Yeah, actually, no, I'll take that back. I have hunted birds on private land, but that's it. As whale and hunts.
They're just
I've never hunted deer, elk, or bear, that on private land ever. So it's all been public land. I'm as blue collar as any guy out there. And that's kind of what, I'm going to stick to that because, for one, that's all I've ever been able to do. I'm not a wealthy guy. I've never had opportunities to go hunt private ranches and whatnot. And there's people that do have that luxury and great, good for them. Maybe if I was in a different situation, maybe if I had a rich uncle that had 10,000 acres, I would probably hunt that land, but I've never had that. So I'm just going to stick to what's worked. And I really like the challenges of the public land thing.
It seems to be working for you okay. I mean, you're doing okay, right?
Well, like you were saying, Ryan, there is some luck to every hunt, I think, but you make your own, and it's about being prepared. I may not be like as well-rounded as others, but I take the hunting very serious, and I dedicate the year to that, if you want to call it a craft. And man, I just love the whole getting prepared, talking about the hunt, getting ready for it, the food prep, the training for it. There's so many aspects to it. It's a lifestyle. And I think if you take it that seriously, you quite honestly, if it makes any sense, you don't allow yourself to fail. It's too important to you. So you just give everything you have. And there's plenty of animals on public land. There's old age animals on public land throughout the West, and still finding areas that aren't getting looked at and finding unpressured animals out there for sure.
Yeah, I don't think that can be your public land deal can be overemphasized. That's pretty unique. And I'm not against hunting on public land or private land. Hell, if I had opportunity to hunt private land, I'd do it no problem. But I think a lot of guys get fed this line of the success, and the people on the other end aren't always honest on where they're taking those animals, and it gives people unrealistic expectations
for sure
of the West. Sure. Yeah. So that's kind of why I wanted to point that out.
Yeah, there is something to that for sure. And I don't ever want to act like, a snob and say, public land is the only way, because it's not. There's private land out there, and there's a lot of reasons for guys to hunt private land. Right. But there's different unique challenges on public land. Right. And I think it's fun to, I don't think my freezer is going to be empty for a while. I'm not worried about that, the meat so much, but I like the adventure. I like the challenges and, those big wilderness areas. I mean, there's adventure galore and there's all kinds of challenges in there, and there's good animals as well. So I just like that part of hunting. And again, if I had, access to some private stuff growing up, I would be all over it. And you could probably take some great animals and still have big adventures out there. It's just, it's never been something that I've been afforded. And, I've never been in that situation or boat. But
speaking of food prep, you got any new recipes? You got anything new you tried this year? We talked about your little balls things last year.
Mm-hmm.
That's still
roasted balls. Oh man, there's so many recipes we could talk about. Pick one. I mean, you got to keep it interesting. It's always evolving and changing as far as different snacks and, everything from breakfast, lunch, snacks, dinners. Always kind of spicing it up with something different. Breakfast is my tried and true. I do that mush, that mountain mush. It's got oats. So you can use quinoa flakes and replacement of oats if you want. There's so many variations to all of these things. Even the dinners that, you just never get old, it never gets boring or old or stale. So, You know, as far as my breakfasts, it's basically it's half cup of oats. You can add whatever flavor. If you're you know, into Mountain Ops, you can add whatever flavor protein powder that they have. I've tried everything from the lemon poppy seed to the banana cream to the chocolate vanilla, and it just kind of it's unique to that breakfast. You can use powdered milk. You can add that to it. You can add chia seeds, nuts, dried fruit, dried berries, peanut butter powder, any variation that you like, or build five separate meals for that week. And it just never gets old. Quinoa flakes is a good one. A little more protein in that if you're okay with quinoa. As far as snacks goes, yeah, I've done the peanut butter balls or protein balls for a while, and those are ridiculously easy to make, which is why I like them. They're a no-bake peanut butter. It's basically peanut butter, agave, honey, and oats. And again, you can add anything you want, from seeds, berries. You could add chocolate chips if you want, and sweeteners, honey, agave, maple syrup. They're about as easy to make as it gets, and they're healthy. They're clean. Shredded coconut to kind of, you know, you roll them in shredded coconut at the end, and man, they pack up real nice. You flatten them out, put them in a zip, or put them in a vacuum pack bag, and you got all the snacks you want, and they're extremely cheap. And I am a frugal, cheap bastard. So spending even $3 on a bar kills me. And usually those bars have a lot of sugar in them and stuff that you probably don't need. And so, you know, those are one thing that I enjoy making, just different types of bars, those protein balls. You can also add coffee to those things. Just grind the coffee real fine, like an espresso type blend. Add a couple tablespoons to your mix and roll that up, and you've got this power pack little, pretty tasty little protein ball. But
what percentage is your commercial food to your homemade food?
It's real small. So all my dinners now, I've used, there's some good companies out there right now, so I wouldn't discourage anybody from using like a Heather's Choice. She's got clean ingredients in her stuff. Mm-hmm. There's new companies coming out that are going to have really good high quality. Off-Grid's a good one. Spencer, he runs real clean ingredients, keeps the sugars at a minimum. Those are about the two companies that I will throw a meal in or two. But quite honestly, most of it's all, again, it's part of that. It's part of the lifestyle. I just like building my own stuff. It's like, do it yourself. You know what you like. You know what works for you. It's cheap as heck. It's so much cheaper to make if you do it yourself by bulk. And obviously you test this stuff in the summertime, and you know, like, what's going to treat your body right, what's going to be enough for calories. And when you make it yourself, you don't have to go out and buy like 30 expensive bars that are full of sugar. So
we tested that out this year on my backpack hunt after talking to you. And we did what? Spaghetti?
Chili. And something else.
I can't think of the other thing. And I wanted to ask you, so you cook up the chili the spaghetti and then the noodles and then dehydrate it?
Yeah.
So the texture was a little bit off, which I don't know if we should have expected that, and I didn't know, and it almost tasted a little bit blander than I remember the actual meal tasting. So do you add more spices so when you reconstituted it, it won't be so bland?
You can, for sure. One of the tricks that I do is I bring those little sriracha packets. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of sugar to sriracha, but it's minimal, and it just makes everything taste better, especially meals, spaghettis and chilies. But yeah, I mean, or throw a little extra spice to it, a little extra Tony's in there, or, you know, extra salt or whatever. Salt is not a horrible big bad thing when you're up there sweating your tail off. I need to replenish some of that. So, yeah, there's so many meals. I did see you guys tried some of the spaghetti meals and dehydrated it. So
I ate all of them. We did quite a bit.
You didn't like it though.
But I kept eating them because they were quick and easy, and they tasted better. You know what they didn't do to me that I really appreciate is I didn't feel like I was going to swell up from all the salt every time I ate it.
Yeah. They like the Mountain House meals. Obviously everybody knows those things are loaded with sodium.
We don't heavily salt our stuff anyway. I prefer to like use Mrs. Dash that doesn't have a lot of, that doesn't have any salt, just so that it doesn't do that. But I should probably, if I'm planning on dehydrating it, add salt, like you said, because I didn't really think about it, I guess.
No. Yeah, a lot of the meals we make, we're using, you know, vegetables from the garden and all that. So a lot more peppers, jalapenos. We make our own like pepper flakes. So you can make your own spices and add those to it and spice it up to pretty, you know, as hot as you want it, habanero flakes or whatever. But
Go ahead.
So the sriracha packets are game changers. They're awesome. They make your meal taste good.
You like that?
I don't know.
I like sriracha.
I don't know.
Good.
How do you know? One thing we didn't figure out is how do you know how much water it takes?
Oh, yeah.
Sure. That's trial and error. So what I use is every time I make a bowl, like if I make this giant pot of stew, or we'll just go with spaghetti since that you guys, that's what you guys made. I'll make this giant thing of spaghetti. We'll eat some at night. I'll take the other half and I'll use that, what we don't eat that night, and throw it in the dehydrator. So I use the same bowl. I know what I ate for a portion size at home. I just make it a little bit bigger. I know I'm going to need more on the mountain. So I add some. So I've got this big bowl and I use the same bowl every single time. And I fill it the exact same every single time. And I know that is going to take about 12 to 14 ounces of water. If you want a little bit runnier, it's 14 ounces and it's always the same. And that has just been through trial and error. I know with that bowl, what I'm going to need for it to rehydrate perfectly.
So do you like put like one bowl to each tray? So after it dehydrates, then you need to, okay, that's smart. That's a good
one. Exactly right. So yeah, sorry, I should have said that. So you fill that bowl with like spaghetti right out of the the pot. And then you use one of those silicone trays or your whatever dehydrator you're running. And you spread that one bowl on that one tray. So every tray is its own meal.
Gotcha.
And that way it's always the same.
Yeah, we had several varying sizes of portions, which did not help our cause at all.
No.
Because we're like, well, this one's runny. Well, this one's not. This one's kind of crunchy, you know?
Consistency is probably the key there.
Yeah, I used to do that. I used to just like fill every rack and then I would take them, you know, uncrumple them and put them in bags. And yeah, the consistency wasn't there as far as the water, the amount of water to add to it.
I also underestimated how long it would take to dehydrate.
Yeah.
It took a long damn time.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. It takes a while. I mean, obviously humidity and everything is a factor, but, you know, in the summer, man, it'll take you 8 hours to get through some of that stuff. If you have it nice and, you know, chopped to small pieces and whatnot, but some of the dishes like the quinoa dishes, one of my favorites is, you know, I'll cook up a bunch of quinoa. I'll stir fry just all the extra veggies I have. And obviously add some meat to that, just burger, you know, non-fat burger, just straight grind, stir fry that all up, add that to the quinoa. And then I'll make up a, like a yellow curry and I'll put that to it. And quinoa rehydrates extremely well. And it's a real good grain. It's pretty healthy for you. And that's one of my favorite meals on the mountain by far.
That sounds good.
Do you guys have like a PDF or something online that you people can go and either get it or buy it or from you guys?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we've got recipes, just straight recipes on our website, huntharvesthealth.com. Uh-huh. And we do have a guide, like it's a dehydration guide that we put out. I think it's on there for like $10 or something like that. But we do have that on the website. So,
Well, it sounds so straightforward when you actually do it, but I'm handicapped, I guess, and I can't.
Step by step by step. Yeah.
It's the things that you don't think about, like, oh, each one portion to each tray. It's just like, oh, we'll throw it on there and then we'll kind of eyeball it and crumple it up.
More
and
is better.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah. And
Here's one for you, Ryan. You like sweet potatoes?
No, I hate sweet potatoes.
I like them.
Oh, I think they're the devil's food.
Anything healthy vegetables, he's like,
ah, yeah.
You know,
I'm about the most vegetables I go to is green beans.
Or carrots.
Or carrots.
If they're raw.
Or tomatoes. Is tomatoes one?
Huh? Yes. I don't think green beans have ever made it on my dehydrator, but for all those normal people people out there that love sweet potatoes, I'm going to throw a recipe at them. It's real easy.
Yeah.
Okay. Cook down some sweet potatoes. Take like 3 yams or sweet potatoes. Cook them down till they're soft. You can go real easy and take applesauce, or you can cook down your apples. 3 sweet potatoes or yams, 3 apples. You cook them down till they're soft. You put those in your Cuisinart. You blend them up. Put about a tablespoon of cinnamon or less, whatever. I put a lot in there. You can add like nutmeg or allspice or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you mix it all up. Put that out on a silicone sheet on your dehydrator, and you make like a sweet potato leather out of it. And that's one of my favorite treats on the mountain. And it's good carbs, clean carbs, and it's super good, real tasty.
That sounds good.
Could you do that with like other shit that tastes good?
Like just apples and pears?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Like a banana chip. You could do the same thing, but like, I like tomatoes. I don't like sweet potatoes.
Oh, you got some tomato leather?
Some tomato leather. Those sweet potatoes just are, oh my God, they're nasty.
You can do anything and everything you want. You can make all those leathers. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many good carbs, better carbs for you that you can make on the dehydrator that you can use and snack on. Honestly, Ryan, just making like banana chips, and you know, they're lightweight. They pack down to nothing if you vac them, and they're like a really good treat on the mountain. So it's pretty amazing what you can do in a dehydrator if you just get creative with it.
Yeah. And what I found is I don't like to eat the dehydrated stuff, so I won't eat it. So I have to find stuff that I'm going to eat, or, you know, you start to get really burnt out.
No, for sure. No, you got to keep mixing in new things and get creative with the everything from the snacks to the meals of all sorts. But, you know, berries and fruits and all that kind of thing, you can dehydrate your own pineapple and add that, or mangoes and add it. It just kind of gives it a different flavor.
Yeah. So what has changed from your first backpack hunt that you remember going on to like now? What, besides probably gear, as you've gotten older and a little bit?
What has changed? I've gotten one heck of a lot smarter, because I don't know if you've heard, my first backpacking trip is I got lost. I got at the first deer. I got completely turned around, lost. I was 14. My dad turned me loose in a big wilderness area in Washington. Killed a 4-point buck. He was a small one, looked like a giant at that age. I was pretty stoked he was a 4-point, but I went the wrong direction coming out of there. Big snowstorm came in. I did not have the gear I needed. I had dropped everything on the trail, no light, no gloves. Ended up getting my way out of there with the help of some people on a drop camp, fortunately, and they pretty much saved my life on that. But so much has changed. I mean, just, it's hard not to go to the gear, because, you know, we're living in an era where everything is better and lighter and more comfortable. And that's probably the number one thing. We are spoiled today with gear compared to what we
are.
Back in those days, back in the 80s and the 90s, I mean, everything was heavy, man. Everything was in a can. It wasn't dehydrated food even back in those times. So no, we got nothing to complain about now.
There's that one can of chili.
Yeah, it was like, what was it, Denny Moore stew and Nally's chili back then, and Spam. Sure. Those are like the styles of our hunt camp back in the day.
I remember it's like in the late 90s, probably my first backpack hunt, and maybe mid 90s. Anyways, I thought it'd be smart to take a bunch of those MREs in the whole package, not break them down, just take the whole damn thing. The pack, I swear my pack in had to weigh 80 pounds.
For sure. Oh, we were tougher back then, for sure. I mean, I remember late hunts in Idaho where, you know, we had those big, remember those big green, like wool pants?
Oh, yeah. And I still have those, some.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're scratchy, but you can't get cold in those pants. I mean, you get rained on, they get heavy, but you can't get cold. I thought that was like the best thing ever. That and like fleece gaiters, and everything was heavy. Everything was wool. And no, we've come a long way. So I'd say from my first trip to now is just that. I mean, now you're going in on a 5-day hunt, and your pack is 35 to 40 pounds, that's significant. That changes everything. Yeah. So much more mobile than you could be back then. And just, yeah, much more comfortable.
What's your thoughts on quilts?
I don't like quilts. I'll say it. I'll admit that.
I'll go down with you. I hate quilts too.
I love quilts, but I've tried them. Man, I got an Enlightened quilt that I was really hoping I was going to like. I mean, it's enticing, man. It's sexy. It's like 17 ounces or 19 ounces. And
19 ounces will freeze your ass off.
Exactly right. No, once you spent a night in the cold, and you know, maybe quilts are made for early season, but how many early seasons have you ran into a giant snowstorm or been pinned down with some wind and snow and 2 feet comes in? I mean, it happens. And, I have a handful of experiences where a quilt was the last thing I ever would have wanted. It's hard. You want to save every little bit of heat you have in those situations, and a quilt will not do that. You want to sit up and cook. A bag just keeps you warmer, in my opinion. I know there's a little bit of savings on the weight, but I don't know if anybody can change my mind if it comes to, if you're getting pinned down on a mountain in a bunch of snow and cold weather comes in and you're going to sit it out on the mountain and wait for it to break. Mm-hmm. I don't think a quilt is the way to go. And so I'm going to stick with the bags, something that's just going to, you can just cocoon in and deal with, ride out that weather. And I'll pack the bags right now, the 15 degree bags, you're looking at 2 pounds, 3 ounces, a lot of these things. So yeah, I'll pack the 2 pounds.
10 ounce savings. The yeah. quilts are like a 10 ounce savings. I'd rather just pack a little bit less food and stay warm.
Yeah, no, I'm not a fan. And I know there's a lot of people out there that are, and that's fine. But no, I've just had a few situations where I knew that I would have suffered with a quilt. Even in the early season, sometimes that weather comes in and you'll get snowstorms in September. And man, no, I like my bag for sure.
Scott Solomon says, "Hi, Rye." So he could be saying that to both of us, which I appreciate.
Maybe he is. Yeah. I'm feeling a little neglected right now. I'm not going to lie. Thanks a lot, Scott.
Scott's a good dude.
I'm with you on those quilts, though. I've tried 2 different times. I've talked to 2 different quilt owner, manufacturer owners, and I always wonder if I go round and round on Rockside with people that love quilts, and I'm like, I'm not knocking on you, but damn, how much time do you spend in the woods? Because sometimes they're okay, and sometimes I don't care what I do. I just freeze my ass off.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I hear people even talking about, some of these 15 degrees are too warm, but I mean, it's not rocket science. All you got to do is either get out of it or unzip it a little bit.
Well, what are you going to do when you're already up there if weather rolls in? That's my thought is like, yeah, well, it's great. You know, you can look at the weather forecast, which is what we did on my backpack hunt. Mm-hmm. But then it ended up raining and then snowing. And yeah. I was like, well, thank God we,
with 0% chance of either.
Yeah. So it's like you can't account for when the weather's going to change. And in Idaho and Montana, that just happens like frequently through the day.
So. Absolutely. I can remember just 2 years ago, me and Joey, we were on a hunt in Washington, and we weren't expecting the dump of snow that fell onto us. And we were down in this little hole, and we finally got to the place that we wanted to be. But the weather moved in, and we weren't going to crawl out of the mountains. We were going to ride it out, and we rode it out for a couple of days until it broke. But I remember Ryan sitting there in that bag, in the warmth of that bag, it was a 15 degree bag, and still, with everything on, you got to sit up and cook. And I mean, it was a cold little, hole that we were in. There's no way I would have given up 10 degrees or anything. I loved being in that bag, and every single ounce every single ounce of heat mattered to me at that point. And no, that would have been a total disaster if we would have been in the quilts. Windy and husky.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you guys, you and Tanya, you're skinny folk. I'm husky and I still get cold and I run hot. So I'm thinking, how in the hell are these guys doing that?
Yeah, I know. I got nothing. I would die. And then I would be pissed off when I got back of epic proportions. Everybody would be getting an angry email.
I'll run one of those, like maybe on some scouting trips, because I still have that bag, that Enlightened, and I'll probably want to use it for some, but maybe on some scouting trips or something like that, where I just need some type of a little blanket, but you know, death hike, something like that, where you just don't need, need the warm.
Scott says he left on that hunt. Is that true?
Yeah, that was it. He wasn't with us, but he was with another group, but they got that same storm. So, it was a brutal, out of nowhere, big snow, big cold, big wind. So,
Scott, did you have a quilt with you? Is that why you had to leave?
We're getting over an hour, so we just want to go through two more questions for you.
I don't know about
the EXO, your ETHO, EXO, they call it Death Hell Hike. I talked to your cousin, Joey. He said he loves, and I do too, ultras, and you don't like ultras. You have a different philosophy on boots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I would love ultras if they fit my foot. I don't know. They just don't fit my foot. They're just not that comfortable on me for whatever reason. Death Hike, a lot of guys ran those ultras, especially this last year. I mean, they're a popular shoe. There's something to them because everybody loves them. Last year's Death Hike, we did 93 miles in the Sawtooths of Idaho. And, a lot of people were in those. There's still a lot of foot issues, a lot of blisters. You can't get around foot pain and stuff like that on those type of miles. But like myself, I ran just a lightweight pair of Crispies. They were the Laponias. And I had... This was the first year that I'd had those, bought them back in February, and I wore those, and they're basically like a tennis shoe. They're real soft, but they're completely waterproof. And I loved them. I mean, they are made for my foot. Mm-hmm. They may not be for everybody's, but, now I'm just not an ultra guy. That being said, I've spent a lot of, early archery seasons hunting in those, Solomon, what are they?
The 40s.
Those cross, whatever. No, not the 40s. No, the tennis shoe.
Speed cross.
Yeah.
That's what we had before. Yeah.
I've ran Nevada in those for a couple of years, early season, and they're great. Nice, just low cut tennis shoe and good traction. Ankle
do
support.
Do you like stiff boots or no?
I hate stiff boots.
Me too. I cannot stand them.
Nah, I know. And there's a lot of people that'll tell you got to have a stiff boot. And I'm here to say it does not work for my foot. Don't let people tell you that because everybody's different. I've never had foot issues. I've never had like tight Achilles or tendons that, for whatever reason, maybe it's my opinion that if you've gone minimalist for a lot of years, you strengthen the stability muscles in your ankles and whatnot. And I know there's people that are prone to ankle issues, but man, for myself, just speaking from personal experience, I like a low cut boot. You're always keeping your ankle stable. You're strengthening them year round. It's worked for me, and ankle support is just not something I look for in a boot. I look for comfort, waterproof. Those two are key, and some tread. But, I got real lucky with those pair this year. I ran those boots in every stankin' hunt I did all season, right through the end of late Montana. Those Crispy Laponias.
I don't think I've seen those.
They're an all leather, just a real light. There's no stiffness at all. I know South Cox ran them as well this year on his hunts, Nevada, Colorado, and sounded like from everything I've seen, he loved his as well. But they were a great boot for me. And again, I know everybody's different, so
right. Don't
hate on me if you get them and you hate them. But it's worked for me.
Yeah, boots are like optics, man. You can't tell somebody what's good or bad; they got to try it themselves.
It's even worse, I think, than optics because I don't know.
Some people roll ankles and they're susceptible to that, and you need a stiffer, boot, and you probably want some ankle support.
Well, I was going to ask you that because I find when I wear a stiff boot, I turn my ankle more than when I do have a softer shoe.
Crutch, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So. No, I Yeah, I do so much better in a tennis shoe. And I don't know. It's a weird thing. I think there's a lot of people that want that ankle support. They look for it. I hear it, you know, with heavy packs or on side hills, and I can't stand it. I like either a low or mid top boot that's real soft, and I have yet to have any issues with my legs and lower legs. So it's working for me. And obviously there's people out there, I know, like the Snyders of the world. I mean, they have to have like a really, really stiff boot. But if I'm not mistaken, I think he's had some like tightness in tendons and Achilles and stuff like that. So maybe it suits him better for that.
But if he could use a ski boot, he would.
Yeah, for sure. I've heard that. So no, everybody's just got to do the research in the summer and figure out what works for you.
Yeah, that's true. So what's your plan for 2019?
Oh man, big plans, man. I don't know if you saw, but I drew a Wyoming elk tag. I know that's high priority. I've never hunted Wyoming in my life. I've driven through it once, but being from Washington, Wyoming is always so far to drive. It's just a long way. So I never really put in for it. This year, I'm close. I mean, it's a couple hours away and I'm in Wyoming from where I'm at now. So I threw my name in the hat and I got a tag. No idea how I got lucky and drew it. I think I had like a 14% chance of drawing it or whatever. So I'm going to put a lot of my time into that. I've got some hunts here in Montana that I'm going to really dedicate some time to. Spring Bear. We got a big trip coming up in Idaho. And then, so I'm also going to New Zealand, which is something I've wanted to do for a lot of years. And this year, now that I'm getting kicked out of Washington and I got to give up all my points for moose, sheep, goat, I may never hunt goats. My long-term strategy was to draw a Washington goat and hunt a goat in my lifetime. And it'd probably be in Washington. I'll probably never be able to afford, you know, hunting these big money hunts somewhere for goats. But since that's getting taken away, I just can't. It's so outrageously expensive to apply back in Washington as a non-res. Tar seemed like the next best thing. And man, started looking and researching New Zealand, and you can do that trip for so cheap, quite honestly. So been learning about that. And we're going to go over there and try to hunt some of those public land tar up on the top of the mountain, and going to hike way up in there and spend some time and figure that out. And that's been a dream trip. I've wanted to do something like that forever. Never hunted out of country, but tar is just one of those things. It's, I don't know, it's got an appeal to me for some reason. So we're going to give that a shot this year. And that's going to be, I think we're going to do that in June. So it'll be going into their winter.
Nice. Well,
good luck.
Good luck. And I think that wherever you go, it seems like luck finds you. So I'm sure you will land on prepared. Your feet.
That's a big commitment in time and you know, dollars. It's not a ton of dollars, but it's dollars that, you know, those are precious. So going to spend a lot of time preparing, doing as much research, talking to people as we can, and really figuring that out. We're going to go into that high country and see what we can do in New Zealand. But as far as the rest of the hunt, it's going to be a lot of Montana, some Idaho, dipping into your country. And
I knew you and would. All that. I knew you would.
See, what's that?
I knew you
yeah.
would.
It's hard not to, man. Idaho's a great place. It's a great state.
I agree.
So, it's okay. I mean, don't come here. Don't move here. I mean, it's just okay that everyone.
If we don't get our draws in these other states, there's always Idaho. So.
Idaho's sure. a good state. I can hunt. Me and Tanny could hunt here the whole season and never leave and hunt dang near every day in the fall. So.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's incredible. Yep,
I just
for
said
sure.
it out loud. What a
God,
dumbass.
Idiot.
So, yeah.
Well, Ryan, but,
we're excited. It's going to be a great one. Loving where we're at here in Montana. It's kind of centrally located, so yeah. Everything's closer. Idaho, Wyoming, everything, Colorado, Nevada, they're all closer.
That's true.
You even hit some of those Dakotas now.
I know. Yeah. I was talking to a guy the other day who was talking about Dakota. So someday.
Yeah, we feel your pain. We're like right up on the panhandle. So we're like next to Canada. And everyone's like, well, you're in Idaho. Aren't you close to? And I'm like, no, we're not close to anything. We have to go a long ways to get to anything.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess definitely. Besides you guys, but I mean, that's still what, 2-3 hours?
Well, you're 4 hours, four and a half.
Yeah.
You guys are, yeah, at least that still from where you're at to get to Bozeman. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Sure. All right, Ryan. Well, thanks a lot for coming on. If you guys are watching, caught this episode late, we're going to have the podcast out on Monday so you can listen to it in its entirety. Nick Stevens, thanks for finding us. And again, Ryan, thanks for taking your time.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on here. It's fun.
As always, thanks for listening. To find more episodes, go to AveryAdventures.com. If you want to get a hold of us at Tanya at AveryAdventures.com. Again, we really appreciate you listening, and we'll see you next time.